Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to watch and listen today. I'm joined by the Minister for Health and Social Care, David Ashford, MHK, and our Director of Public Health, Dr. Henrietta Ewart. Since I last spoke to you a week ago, we have identified three new cases of COVID-19. The first of these I announced on Tuesday, and the most recent two were identified late yesterday evening. All three cases are close contacts of people who tested positive for the virus last week and so are part of the existing cluster. As these individuals were last week identified as being at a high risk of contracting the virus through contact tracing, they were already self-isolating for 14 days. All three people became symptomatic in recent days during their isolation and contacted the COVID 111 service to request a test. My sincere thanks to these people and to everyone caught up in the small cluster of cases. You have followed the rules, you have acted responsibly, and in doing so, you have helped to protect your friends, family, co-workers, and our wider community. These cases serve as an example of precisely why contact tracing and directing people at high risk to self-isolate is so important. It has helped us to contain the cluster and bring it under control. As well as my thanks to the individuals involved, I also want to put my thanks on record to our contact tracers, the COVID 111 team, our swabbers, our lab staff, and everyone else involved in the test and trace process. I said that if we saw an outbreak, our response would be test, 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 trace, trace, trace. That is what we did, and I am relieved that the indications so far are that this rapid and decisive approach to contain the spread of the virus has been effective. So where does this leave us in terms of overall numbers? We have 9 active cases. 6 of these are in the cluster, 2 are travel related, and 1 is related to patient transfers. Today, new measures came into effect to help reduce the risk of the virus spreading in our community when people travel to our island. Those arriving on the island must continue to follow their direction notice, isolating either for 14 days or, if they are a key worker, by following the stringent rules that are in place. What is new from today is that where there are other people in the traveller's household, they will all need to self-isolate for 14 days. This has been introduced to reflect the prevalence of the virus in the United Kingdom and Ireland, and because of the increase in the number of returning residents we expect to see in the coming weeks as we approach Christmas, such as our returning students. When I announced this new measure last week, I said how the Council of Ministers had recognised the difficulty this could pose for some households. It could mean people having to miss work and children having to be absent from school. To try and reduce disruption and inconvenience, we unveiled a self-isolation accommodation scheme, making up to £250 per week for the 2-week period available towards the cost of accommodation to provide an alternative place for people to self-isolate. And in doing so, it allows others in their household to continue their lives as normal. Government has worked at speed to get the self-isolation scheme up and running, working closely with the island's accommodation providers. I am pleased to report good progress on this front. As at noon today, 129 properties have been registered for the scheme. This represents 461 bedrooms and 898 bed spaces. 133 returning residents have so far signed up for the scheme, and I want to thank everyone who has made this happen so quickly. Colleagues in the Department for Enterprise, the online regional travel group, and Isle of Man Travel Event Services, who are acting as agents, and of course, our accommodation providers. If you or someone you know is travelling back to the island and would like to inquire about booking accommodation through the self-isolation scheme, you can find full details online at www.gov.im/COVID-19. That's all in lowercase. We have also updated the website with a number of questions and answers so people can understand the rules around whole household isolation and the financial support available. A few points are, I think, worth highlighting here. The financial assistance for accommodation is only available for returning Manx residents. It does not apply to people who have received an exemption to travel to the island on compassionate grounds, for example. Also, please remember that this support is a one-off, so can only be used once. If you have already booked accommodation with a provider who has signed up to the scheme, but did so before the announcement last Thursday, and your booking is for today onwards, then you are eligible for the financial support. One final point worth mentioning is on the topic of exercise for households isolating because of a traveller, but which are free of the virus. So long as no one is displaying symptoms of COVID-19 and has not tested positive for the virus, the traveller and other members of the household can exercise outdoors for up to 1 hour each day. But you must wear a face covering, you must physically distance yourself from other people, and you must exercise alone or only with members of your own household. Whole household isolation needs to be placed in context. It is about mitigating risk and offers us two lines of defence. The first is protecting an isolating household from a potentially infectious householder, and the second is protecting the community from a potentially infectious household. Please remember, despite whole households having to self-isolate, the regulations require that, as far as reasonably practical, and I know it's not always easy, householders and the person that have travelled should distance to reduce the likelihood of transmission. If you are a traveller, you should have your own room and remain in it as much as possible, keeping the door closed. Use a separate bathroom for the rest of the household, if available. If you have to share a bathroom, regular cleaning will be required. You should avoid using shared spaces, such as the kitchen, whilst others are present. Take your meals back to your room to eat. Everyone in your household should wash their hands regularly, avoid touching their face, and clean frequently touched surfaces regularly. In cases where the virus does unfortunately spread within a household, the second line of defence is that the household has already been self-isolating and that isolation is extended for a further 14 days. This second line of defence protects the wider community. Moving now to vaccines, it has been another week of progress in the race to develop an effective vaccine for COVID-19. One from Moderna has shown to be up to 95% effective, according to early trial data. Another from Oxford University has shown an encouraging immune response in older adults. This, of course, comes hot on the heels of last week's news on the positive results of trials for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. There are also encouraging signs from Sputnik V vaccine being developed in Russia. In Tymwald this week, four sets of regulations under the Medicines Act were approved, putting in place the appropriate legal framework to enable us to deliver a mass vaccination programme on the island. Work continues at pace on planning for mass COVID vaccination, with a dedicated vaccination programme board established and meeting regularly. The Isle of Man has secured access to the UK's supply of COVID-19 vaccines. Doses of the vaccine will be allocated proportionally based on our population. The rapid developments we are seeing with vaccines are hugely encouraging and offer a real glimmer of hope in the coming year. But we still have a long way to go, and I must temper expectations. This may in time be a silver bullet, but it will not be a speeding one. A vaccination programme of this scale is unprecedented in modern times. As well as all the hurdles to get a vaccine approved and manufactured at volume, the logistical challenges of delivering vaccinations en masse are significant. Our approach here in the Isle of Man will be to target the most vulnerable groups first. Our initial focus will be on care homes and nursing homes. For vaccinations, there is a long road to travel, but that we find ourselves in a position to begin mapping out our route so soon after the virus hit is more than anyone dared hope for at the start of the pandemic. I will, of course, keep you fully updated on developments with vaccinations and the work of the Vaccination Programme Board. And now to questions from the media. And first, we have ITV Granada and Josh Stokes. Good afternoon, Josh. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question is for the Health Minister, please. Minister Ashford, we've heard the news revealing the letter that was read out during a previous press briefing has since been destroyed. Given this letter was brought into a public press briefing by yourself, isn't it in the public interest that it is seen and evidenced when requested, while also keeping that writer anonymous?
Well, as a data controller, Josh, I apply the data protection principles to all letters that I receive. And one of the central data protection principles is that correspondence should only be retained for the purposes that it was sent until that is expended. In relation to this letter, the purpose for it being sent was for the author to be able to have their views shared. It was read out, so the text of the letter is available. Once that was done, the purpose for which it was held was basically expunged, so the letter was shredded. That isn't something I've just applied to this letter. I apply it to all written letters I receive. So to give you an example, if someone writes to me giving a compliment about an area within DHSC, I will email that compliment in, and once that is done, the letter will be shredded as confidential waste.
But do you accept that this does look slightly suspicious, given it was brought to a public press conference, and it does bring in the question of transparency of the government that you've always claimed to strive towards giving?
Well, I don't quite see the content of the letter was read out. I think we've got to be very, very clear. The only reason, to be frank, that there could possibly have been a Freedom of Information request on this would have been to try and identify the person who wrote it. You wouldn't be able to do that anyway. Even if the letter existed today, the only thing that would be released is actually the text of the letter which was read out. The actual signature, the name and the contact number of the person who wrote the letter would have been blanked out, because you can't use FOI or even a personal data subject access request to access someone else's data. Section 25 of the Freedom of Information Act has an absolute exemption for personal information, and there's also a qualified exemption under Section 39. Like I say, this isn't something that's happened for just this letter. I apply it across all written correspondence I receive.
Okay, thank you. And my second question, you mentioned the recent hopes from around the world of an upcoming vaccine. Do you have an idea on any numbers when it comes to the vaccine in the Isle of Man? And now that there are a variety of different vaccination programmes, how is it decided which vaccine the island receives?
I'll let you take that one, David, if you want.
To be frank, Josh, it will probably be a mix of vaccines. It's not necessarily going to be one particular vaccine. The UK has placed orders across all the different vaccines that have been developed, so we will receive various different types of vaccine. At the moment, they all appear to be pretty much within the same sort of tolerance areas, but we still do need to see the scientific data in detail behind a lot of the vaccines that have been developed. You know how cautious I normally am, but it is looking very positive. And I think, the way we will get the vaccine is it's through NHS supply, and the UK will do it on a per head of population basis. So we will get our share based on the population on the island.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, if I can say before moving on, Josh, we're not going to get hundreds of or tens of thousands in one go. This will be drips and drabs as certain amounts are delivered to the UK. We will get our per capita share, as the Health Minister has just said. So I do not envisage us all being vaccinated, or obviously we're starting with people in care homes and nursing homes, then the staff that look after them, and going down the high risk register effectively, but this will take a number of months. It's not going to be done in a few weeks. It's going to take a long time to get this done, I'm afraid. That's just the position we are. I don't want anyone thinking we'll have everyone vaccinated by, I don't know, the middle of January or something. It's going to be quite some time to do this. Okay, next is Sam Turton from Isle of Man Newspapers. Good afternoon, Sam. Fastamai,
gentlemen. If I could just start with, we had a message in this morning, Mr. Ashford, I believe this lady said she did a message you as well, who has concerns about, yesterday her mother travelled to Liverpool for treatment. On the way out, the plane was very spacious, there weren't many people on it. but on the way back with the border restrictions coming, the plane was quite full to the point where people were sitting next to each other. And there was no social distancing on board. People were wearing masks, but there's still an issue with that. Given the fact that we knew this was coming a week ahead, could provisions have been made, and provisions were they looked at, in fact, made for how people would be travelling back, and especially for patients as we approach Christmas? Will this be looked at in terms of safety of people travelling for treatment and people coming in from across the UK?
So in relation to this, Sam, this isn't something new. I've had several people contact me about this. Now, obviously, it's a worrying time for everyone, particularly with the spread there is in the UK. But with airlines, we've got to remember they are commercial operations. Now, the principles for airlines apply exactly the same as they have throughout the entire pandemic period. PPE should be worn. They are not face-to-face with people. They are side-by-side, which also changes the risk of spread in several studies that I've read around the world. The airlines are not going to leave seats vacant because they are a commercial operation at the end of the day. So the option is either DHSC buys up a load of seats we are not going to use, or unfortunately, on the busy flights, you are going to have people who are going to be sat next to one another. If something does occur with someone, contact tracing goes through that anyway, identifies any high-risk contacts there may have been on that plane, and they are identified in the usual way.
Thank you. And secondly, I've been told by a number of dentists that there's been a change in their PPE structure, and they've been told they'll have to be buying it themselves now. This will not be provided by the department anymore. Why is this change being made?
Well, can I firstly say, Sam, I don't think that is a change. As far as I'm aware, the dentists have always paid for their PPE. What we have done in the past is we have sourced the PPE for them. So that might be what the change is. They might have been told they've got to source it themselves. Because if you remember, in the early days of the pandemic, PPE was in very high demand around the world. So it got to the point that the manufacturers, say, of FFP3 masks, which are the sort of masks that you would be using within a dental practice, FFP2, FFP3, they weren't willing to sell in quantities of less than 25,000. Now, let's be perfectly blunt, a dentist on the Isle of Man is not going to expend or even potentially have the funds to expend buying 25,000 masks, which they're never going to use. So what we did is we stepped in as DHSC and actually said they could have PPE off us, but at cost. So they've always, as far as I'm aware, been charged for it, but we supplied it out of our own. So I assume the change you're referring to is because things have relaxed now in relation to PPE, dentists are being told that to source their own. If they come up against problems, we are not going to leave dentists without PPE. We will ensure that they always have access to what they require. But in terms of cost, they are private practices and they do need to meet that cost.
Thanks very much, Sam. Right, turning now to Alex Bell from the BBC Isle of Man. Good afternoon, Alex. Fastamai.
The fact that households from today have to isolate altogether if one resident returns, do you accept this will make members of the household less likely to follow those guidelines for distancing, which you set out earlier?
Well, we are giving the opportunity for everyone returning to isolate at a different location, Alex, if they want to, and we're paying up to £250 per week for the two-week period for them to isolate. So, A, an awful lot of people were doing this beforehand. B, we're now offering that. So whole households don't have to self-isolate if they don't want to. So one would hope that... I've always placed my trust on the Great Manx Public. They haven't let us down. And I hope most sincerely that they continue to follow the rules. And at the end of the day, Alex, we've got to trust everyone. People know the rules. I've just stated them again today, asking them to follow if they do isolate at home. But it does come down to an element of trust. But we have enabled all households, if that person coming back wishes to isolate separately, then there is an opportunity for them to do so.
Thank you. That leads on to my second question. I've been contacted by a number of people, actually, who are saying that even with that £250 offer, the accommodation available to them is out of their budget, and accommodation within their budget is now fully booked, so they can't come back. That's pushing them to actually stay in the UK over Christmas time. Is there any kind of recourse on perhaps a case-by-case application basis for people to apply for to appeal to maybe come home and isolate with some financial support, given really that they do have every right to come home and enjoy a normal Christmas here?
Well, they have every right to come home, Alex, and they can stay at their family home if they want to and pay nothing. But I've just read out that we have hundreds of bed spaces available for people to contact, all at the £250 per week price guide. So I've given the www.covid.19 address for people to go online if they can't find suitable accommodation. That's why the Department of Enterprise have come up with a list of people who are prepared, of providers of accommodation to help those people. If obviously you want an exclusive penthouse suite in a hotel, that's your choice. You'll have to pay more, but we have accommodation providers offering that accommodation for the £250 per week. So we're not stopping anyone from coming home. They have the opportunity, and the money we've put aside will pay for, in the vast majority of cases, what's being asked.
People are telling me that these are fully booked now, the ones they can afford with the contribution are fully booked. What can they do?
Well, I've just said, Alex, if they contact the Department for Enterprise hotline, which I read out earlier, there is a list of bed spaces available in the hundreds. So that was the latest information I've received today. I'd be highly surprised if in the short period of time that I've received that information that all those bed spaces have been sold. But, if they ring up the helpline, I'm sure they'll get the help that is available for them.
Thank you.
Did you have another question, Alex?
Those were my two.
Those were your two. OK, thanks very much. Next, we have Leanne Cook at 3FM. Good afternoon, Leanne Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question is just for the Health Minister, please. I know you just spoke about a potential vaccine, but already on Ireland, we're seeing people who are against the idea of being vaccinated. My first question is, how would we tackle this if people opted not to get the vaccine?
Well, I think we need to explain to people why it is important that they do take up the vaccine. The vaccine itself is protective, not just of yourself, but also those around you, that you're not going to contract it and then spread it on. There will always be people who don't trust in vaccinations, who don't want anything to do with vaccinations. And as I've said before, I've never been a supporter of mandatory vaccination, and I never will be. I always believe vaccines should be optional. But I think it's important we get our messages out about why this vaccine is so crucial, because you're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting those around you as well. And particularly with the way that COVID spreads and the way it can spread through families, particularly into vulnerable groups, people should be willing to actually take the vaccine. It has gone through the trial stages. Also, in relation to it, it will still have to pass the safety tests. It will still need to seek a marketing authorisation. Yes, it's been done in a shorter time, but that's what has changed is the time frame. It still had to go through the various stages of development.
So my second question follows on from that. If someone does opt not to get the vaccine, would there be limitations on what they can do, for example, in regards to travelling or isolating?
Well, I think that's too early to say. I think different countries will take different approaches, to be perfectly honest. In relation to that, we have no plans to go down that route at the moment. We would have to see how that played out.
OK, thank you.
Thanks very much, Leanne. Before I bring in Paul, just based on Alex Bell's earlier questions, I just want to repeat that if for the self-isolation scheme, where we have a large number of providers, the full details are again at www.gov.in/COVID-19, where you can see the availability, etc., and the details to book accommodation at an agreed price. Right, next we have Paul Moulton from Isle of Man Television. Paul, good afternoon. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. This is for the Health Minister. I need to revisit this letter yet again, and I need to know, or I'd like to know exactly why you didn't think this would at some point be very, very important evidence, because you've read out a letter that hasn't now cannot be substantiated at all. You made allegations about Dr. Glover. You made allegations about the press. And as I'm sure you're well aware, the word is out there that you potentially could have written it. Now, I'm not saying that, but don't you feel that this was incredibly important and you should have taken advice potentially to keep it? And once the freedom of information was in the system, it therefore comes actually relatively, you have to keep it. Am I right on this or not?
Well, firstly, the letter was disposed of before the Freedom of Information request came in, Paul, so that needs to be absolutely clear. Actually, under Freedom of Information, you don't have to keep it once the request comes in the system. There are actually reasons why you can dispose of it while it's in the system, but you have to make clear what those reasons were. In this instance, the letter was disposed of as soon as the purpose was completed. I'm a bit concerned, though, that you say allegations about Dr. Glover. I don't recall there being any allegations about Dr. Glover in that letter.
It was trashing. It was trashing her to some degree. It also made the press look like we were vilified by what you read out. This is unsubstantiated. What you've done can never now be checked because you haven't got any proof.
Paul, all a Freedom of Information request would have done, even if the letter was still here today, is release the text of the letter.
Do you regret
it?
It would not have released.
No, I apply the same. I've just said I'm a data controller. I apply the data protection principles. And one of the central principles of data protection is that correspondence should be retained until the purpose of that correspondence is completed. The purpose of the correspondence is completed.
You think it's fine to make these allegations, which you're reading third party, without having anything substantiated and putting it in the public domain and then getting rid of the proof or the evidence, whatever you want to call it?
I applied exactly.
You're saying everyone should be completely honest and open, and then this is clearly the opposite of that.
Can you not interrupt when a minister's trying to answer, please, as a basic rule?
Well, I can't tell because of the Zoom thing. I can't hear anything. Right. So sorry if I am, because the way we contact each other is obviously on delay systems. So my apologies.
But if I can get a word in edgeways then, Paul, as I stated at the start, I'm a data processor. There's no difference being applied to this letter than I apply to any other piece of correspondence that I receive. So I gave an example there that when I receive a compliment, say, about an area of the department, those type of letters, they're actually shredded same day. Because once the purpose has been passed on, I receive other types of correspondence where people don't actually need a response to the correspondence. They're just actually writing to me to either say thank you for something or something else. Again, those correspondences removed and got rid of same day. I don't apply any different processing to anything I receive. I keep a consistent line in line with data protection principles.
OK, and I'd like to know about just people flying in away now for their transfers for the patients who are going to the UK. Apparently, they're going out quite early, coming back quite late, and quite often they're having to stay outside the hospital, which is causing anxiety. Any comment on that?
Yeah, it's something we are looking at. It's something I have raised myself within the Department of Health and Social Care, particularly, obviously, because we use Northwest hospitals and with the transmission rate that's up there now. It is a long day for a lot of people, and we are looking to see what we can do about that. We are obviously limited because we are bound by the times, the flights of getting people in and out, but it is something I've raised in the department. I've had several people this week on to me about it, and we will look to see what we can do.
Okay, my apologies for talking over you, but honestly, we can't tell when we're doing it on this Zoom thing. It's quite difficult to know when people are talking.
So well, we've got our longer panel debate on Sunday, Paul, and Saturday, sorry.
I look forward to seeing you then. Saturday, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have Simon Richardson from Business 365. Simon, good afternoon, Fasta Mai.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question really is this. Is government close to making a decision over the running of next year's TT? And is it realistic to consider running it later in the year if there is evidence that the COVID situation may improve significantly in the second half of 2021?
Well, that's a very good question, Simon, and I will confirm that we are discussing this in the Council of Ministers at this moment in time, but I can't announce the decision at this moment. We are going to try and make it as fairly imminent as possible once a conclusion has been reached, and I will obviously update everyone, or the Minister for the Department of Enterprise will update when we can release that information.
But would it be realistic, looking ahead, to actually hold it later in the year if June was not suitable?
Well, those are certainly factors that you can look at. There are a number of options, from cancelling it to moving it. You have to look at a multitude of areas. You have to get feedback from sponsors, from teams, from accommodation providers, from our main partners in getting people onto the island in the steam packet. Once you've collated all that information, that then gives you the ability to make as good a decision as you possibly can based in the world that we're currently living in, Simon. And as I say, once we have the final decision, we will make it as soon as possible, because I think it's really important that for teams, etc., that they know what's happening.
Thank you. And secondly, it's been reported that Logan Air is keen to commence a service between the Isle of Man and Heathrow, possibly as early as the end of this month. Would this service be subsidised by government in any way, given the ongoing crisis?
Yes, obviously. Again, we're remarkably well informed, Simon. But yes, we are looking at that. It's really important that we maintain our links for members of the public, business community to go away to London. We obviously maintain it for the patient transfer to Liverpool and Manchester. So, yes, we are working with a number of companies. We have a report, and I expect the Minister for the Department of Infrastructure to be making an announcement in the very near future, because obviously our current contract ends at the end of this month, and we will have to announce what is going to happen going forward. But I'd just like to reassure everyone that the Isle of Man government will ensure that there is connectivity with London for any passengers wishing to travel to London or further afield, or coming from London onto the island.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Simon. And last but certainly not least, Tim Glover from Manx Radio. Good afternoon, Tim. Fast am I.
Not a question this, but we're seeing on the feed there a lot of inquiries about how you are feeling, Health Minister David Ashford. And well, what's the crutch there to beat Paul Moulton with?
Well, I'm delighted to say the crutch isn't there to beat Paul Moulton with, I can assure you of that. I'll be quite honest, I've got a huge cyst on the back of my kneecap, so it's rather painful at the moment. So at the moment, people will see me wandering around with crutches, but I'm up and about, I'm working as normal. Unfortunately, I did miss, rather frustratingly, the Timbaltons sitting on Wednesday because I was up the hospital having it looked at. But don't worry, I'm alive and well, and as you can see, it's a real me, not a virtual one.
Just as well you're not in here, Paul, isn't it?
My first question then, it's well known politicians need to maintain public trust in a time of crisis, which many will say you've done successfully so far. But how do you answer those that are saying now that you're losing that after Lettergate, the whole treatment of a former contracted lead scientist, using a PR company to help present the government message, the confusing wording around the recent COVID-19 cluster, and those who are commenting on social media saying government must think the Great Manx public are stupid?
Right, well, I'll try and take some of those in the order, but using a PR company, I thought the most money that's been paid out on getting our messaging over has been to, I think, Manx Radio and Isle of Man newspapers and then 3FM. I don't see any private media, but maybe you want to expand on that.
Jeff, the mongoose, I think we're referring to there.
Right, and I think if I remember, I'm going on a while back now, that they received a payment. It was a few hundred pounds. I think Manx Radio are in the tens of thousands of pounds, as are some of you others. So I'm really surprised that you should go on about
We're not doing your PR is the difference.
Well, you're getting paid to publish information from us. What's the difference?
That's a big difference. We're a news service, not a PR company.
If I could just come in, Chief Minister, I'm not sure what PR Jeff the Mongoose is supposed to have done for us. This was a question that was asked a few months ago, and the answer was put out, I think, with the amounts in relation to how much they were paid. But they're not doing a full government PR programme. It was for specific things, and if I could just come in on some of the other bits, Tim, very quickly. The simple fact is, you know, we're in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. You know, we are learning as much as anyone. Things are changing day in, day out, and you know, we've got to be perfectly honest. There are going to be missteps along the way, but we have to accept those. But the one thing we have been, and the Chief Minister has always said this from day one, is we have always said that we will be upfront and honest with the Manx public, and we have been in relation to the things that have been going on. We will continue to do that.
Yeah, we have put out whenever we've known and we've had confirmed cases, we've stated it when we can. Yes, there was confusion over the terms of whether it was on island transmission, whether it met with the WHO definitions, but we've tried to explain that as best we can. At no time have we hid the numbers of infections, etc. The only thing we cannot do is discuss an individual person's case. We as politicians are never told who the individual person is, and quite rightly so. Data protection means we, and their rights of privacy mean we cannot know what's going on. We get fed the information once it's been certified as correct, and we come straight away either every Thursday if it's only happened the night before, or we put it out in a press release as soon as we can. Can't do any more than that. Now, occasionally people will announce something straight away or what they believe to be factually correct, but we have to check to make sure that everything is factually correct before we put things out. Now, I'm certainly not trying to say that Al-Man government is perfect and that we haven't put a foot wrong. There are always things that we can do better. It's a learning curve, and yes, we certainly will do our utmost to improve on all things that we do. And if people feel we've made a mistake, then I can only apologise, but we will do our utmost to learn from where they feel we've gone wrong.
Second question, and I'm just reacting to what seems to be getting a lot of comments, and it's to do with pets. Christmas just around the corner, so demand for puppies and kittens obviously is going to peak. Prior to today, people could travel on the Ben McCree, collect the new pet without leaving the boat and without having to self-isolate on returning to the island. Now, with very little notice, and these things are put in place obviously weeks ahead, people now do have to self-isolate under for 14 days. What is behind that decision? Is it the infection rates in England? Is it some sort of scientific data that we don't know about pets carrying COVID? What do you say to people who are saying that this is a very draconian measure and is going to ruin a few families' Christmases?
Right, well, first and foremost, someone going on the boat and getting off the boat and picking up a pet from a member of the public in the United Kingdom is totally unacceptable. And therefore, it's acceptable, but you've got to quarantine. I think what we are looking at happening is that you can put a pet, a puppy, a cat, etc., on the boat in a secure area, and then you can pick it up at the other side. Now, obviously, we did discuss this only today, and the Minister for the Environment, Food and Agriculture is going to be speaking to his vets to then maybe speak to the steam packet to see if there's a safe way of doing this without endangering a spread of COVID. But I'm sure anyone would agree, if everyone else has to isolate, having come into contact with someone in the United Kingdom, then surely we've got to, sadly, apply the same rules and regulations. If you get off the boat, pick up a puppy, and you may well try and keep social distancing, but there is a risk there, and that's deemed too much of a risk to allow them not to self-isolate. But as I say, we are trying to put in a system, Tim, where you can put your, or the person that's selling or giving you the pet can put it in an area agreed by with the steam packet, and then you can pick it up when the boat gets onto the Isle of Man. So we are trying to be as helpful and reasonable as possible while still protecting the safety of the people of the Isle of Man.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. And thank you for those questions. We are now very much in the countdown to Christmas, and this evening we'll see the switch on of the Christmas lights in Douglas, with festivities across the capital to mark the occasion. As with so many events on our island in recent weeks and months, tonight's celebrations stand in stark contrast to the situation our neighbours find themselves in. That people can come together, no social distancing, no masks, and that they can go into shops as normal is remarkable. It is so important that we do not lose sight of how fortunate we are. I know everyone is anxious about Christmas and hoping we can get there without an outbreak that would see restrictions being brought back in. As I've emphasised time and time again, our success to date has been down to you, the great Manx public. Your determination to retain normality and protect our way of life by acting responsibly and following the rules have made all the difference and got us to where we are today. If you're in Douglas this evening for the switch on, I hope you enjoy yourselves and take a moment to reflect on just how fortunate we all are. Please continue to act responsibly to keep our community and our island safe. That's all for today. Thank you very much.